it's hard to read about.
Tuned in to WPVM LP Asheville 103.7 on your FM radio and streaming at WPVMFM.org.
Listen, as the sound enters my inner ear and vibrates through my inner plane, my biosphere.
Part of me learning to be a better listener of others is learning to listen to myself.
When we are listened to, truly listened to, you know, you can feel when someone's deeply listening and we feel heard. We are healed in that moment.
Listen and be heard. Even if your voice shakes without knowing it, you may be saving a stranger.
Listen and be heard is, I guess, part of why I wanted to connect with you, because as soon as you said that, it like stuck a chord in my soul.
Welcome to the Audio Garden, where we cultivate our collective wisdom, nurture creativity, and spread love. My name is Martha Senator, and this is Listen and Be Heard.
Welcome back to the Audio Garden, my friends. It is so good to be here with you once again, and there's so much growing here in the garden at Listen and Be Heard Network. We have another podcast in the works. This one from the Greenhouse Creators Consortium, of which Sound System Culture is one of six members. And Sound System Culture sponsors Listen and Be Heard Network. And all of the members of the consortium are performing artists, musicians mostly, and I'm looking forward to playing some bits and pieces from that as it gets going. All to be culminating with a festival in September. And we also have a new column that will be exclusively on the website, coming from Mitos Susan in the Philippines, who is an alumni of Listen and Be Heard. She used to write for Listen and Be Heard Weekly back when we were in print in the Bay Area. Coming up in a few moments here in the Audio Garden, the author of The Miniaturist's Assistant, Catherine Scott Crawford, and I see Tony Robles ambling along towards the garden gate to welcome her. And also, Malaya Ulan is going to come back around with a little more conversation that began last week. And of course, Hernan will bring us some new music. And from our sister show, Beyond Borders, Dylan Williams, Hybrid Indigenous Stewardship. We're going to give you a little bit of that conversation as well. But first, some poetry. Streaming conscious radio, techno savvy, saying pray, tray at the cafeteria line for further investment of free, laboring, frivolitarian consternarians, agrarian semantic pedantry, fall for all together now. How to be seen without seeing what needs freeing, freaky fresh mess of mediocrity, time for you to pay attention to me, to do about noting the obvious, tenuous, and tenacious tempering of truthful indoctrine of endocrinology, morphology, chronology of events happening today, every day, the same day. The brain has to say what it needs for you to function with compuncture, composing compost from the coop, the stoop, the stopper shopper, cropper hole stopper, his finger in the dike, holding back the sea. You, me, we, be free. And here's Tony Robles at the garden gate.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Tony Robles, and welcome to Listen and Be Heard Radio. If you're checking us out on YouTube, hit the subscribe button. We do want to get a million viewers. If we can get 10 million, that's even better. If you're listening on our website, welcome to our website, listenandbeheard.net. Today's guest has something very much in common with me. We're alums of the same school. The author, Catherine Scott Crawford, or we can call you Katie, right?
Yes. Is
the author of a wonderful, wonderful book called The Miniaturist's Assistant, which was published in May of 2025 by Regal House Publishing. And it was the winner of the Sir Walter Raleigh Award for Fiction. So this royalty thing, you got Regal House and you got Sir Walter Raleigh, and we just got a damn good story. Katie, welcome to Listen and Be Heard Radio.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
I was reading a little bit about you, your bio on Facebook and some other places. And again, you and I attended Vermont College of Fine Arts. However, you know, you describe yourself as being a recovering academic, which I thought was really interesting. So, you know, why don't we start off from there, if you can talk about that a little bit.
I taught as an adjunct English professor for, 14 years, something like that, and thought the whole time that I was going to end up with a PhD. I have a master's in English, an MFA in creative writing, and loved teaching, mostly because I loved my students. They were just the best, and I loved my relationships with them. But the adjunct life, as you know, can be a really tough one. And so I think it was a case of me loving the job more than the job loved me. What I found was I did not have enough gas left for my own creative and intellectual work. And that was what I wanted to do more than anything. Mostly because I'm kind of an all or nothing personality. So if I'm doing something, for better or for worse, I am all in on doing that. And I am the world's worst multitasker. And so I think multitasking is a total myth, you know, but I'm really bad at it. So if I'm teaching, I'm teaching, you know, mm-hmm. and I am not writing and I'm not doing other things, even though I did during all those years of teaching. But I really, really wanted to finish another novel and another long prose project. I was teaching three classes, and then I had my office hours, and then I was paying a preschool teacher to watch my young kids until I could like scream in a few minutes late, pick them up every day. And my husband said, "Babe, I think you bring home about $150 after we pay for childcare at the end of each month. Like, let's give it a go and see what we can do so you can finish another book." And so that's when I stepped back to write The Miniaturist Assistant, but that's what I kind of call by recovering academic. I also will never not be an academic. I've got full on nerd brain, and I love, you know, I love that stuff. It just takes a toll on you when you're trying to be creative.
Diving into the possibilities and seeing the potential of students and the exchange of ideas. I know going to Vermont College, as we both did, how you can be immersed in that. And then when you're out of residency, that's where the come down happens. Speaking of Vermont College, I'm going to bring up one of the advisors who we both know, Clint McCown. In his book called Mr. Potato Head versus Freud, he calls setting the hydrogen atom of fiction, the most basic part of fiction, which in his mind is paramount, is probably the most important thing. The Miniaturist Assistant is very much tied to South Carolina. I was very much immersed in that as I was reading it, and in the history of the area. You know, talk about your connection with this part of the country.
That sounds just like Clint. He actually, I'll just say as a side note, he was my advisor during the critical thesis portion of our program. So My critical thesis was all about place. And so I got like a lifetime of lessons from Clint McCown on writing place. But I'm from South Carolina. So I was born in the upstate of South Carolina in Greenville, and tons of family there still, even though I live in the mountains of North Carolina. And a long, you know, ancestry of my family had come into Charleston in the late 1600s, you know. So I grew up spending tons of time with family who lived down in Charleston and around the Lowcountry and the coast. And I'm just one of those people that's kind of obsessed with place. So even as a kid, I was just kind of entranced by the place where I lived and just wanted to know everything about it.
You know? You had this natural curiosity.
Oh, yeah. And thank goodness my mom was a high school Spanish teacher.
Oh, okay.
She loved questions. Like to this day, she'll say, "You had a question from the time you could talk every other second." And I said, "Did that drive you crazy?" And she said, "No, I loved it."
Wow.
For better, for worse. Yeah.
Wow. that's great. A big theme in your book that I appreciated was this notion of restoration and recovery. because that's part of the plot. You have a character that is working in a museum and restoring these miniature portraits. But, you know, your thesis at Vermont College of Fine Arts had something to do with ancestral memory.
That was what I worked on with Clint McCown. That was epigenetics and ancestral memory and this idea of ancestral DNA. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's being Southern where your past is, the past is kind of thrown in your face, no matter who you are and whether you want it or not, you know, every day. But I always felt very close to my ancestors. I thought that everybody felt that way, you know, and I thought that everybody could kind of walk around and see time and layers. Like, I love to go to a place and I'm going to study the topo map. Like, I want to know, like, where the city came from. I want to know, like, why that wharf was built there. Like, that's just in me. And so when it came time to write that critical dissertation, I knew that I wanted it to have something to do with historical fiction because that's the genre that I write in. And I had started looking up. I think I had, you know, like writers and poets and everybody, you know, all of us that we do, I had seen it somewhere. I had seen a study. It was either at University of Virginia or was it at Emory. It was somewhere that scientists had conducted on mice. And they had found that these mice had inherited the phobias of their like ancestors. And so all these reputable studies started happening around the idea of ancestral memory. And so I just thought, okay, well, this is clarifying for me something that I felt is true all along, which is we carry our ancestors' memories in our bodies. That's kind of the way I got around writing about what I really wanted to write about, you know, for that essay. Yeah, which I really do believe is true. And I think that historical fiction hopefully brings the idea to fruition and to life, which is part of what the miniaturist assistant, one of the themes that I've tried to bring across was that I think we all share the same stories.
Professor Joy DeGruy, you know, talks about post-traumatic slave syndrome. You know, in terms of the Black community, she's done a lot of lectures on that, written books on that. Baldwin said that history is not the past. It is in the present. We carry our history with us. We are our history. If we pretend otherwise, we are literally criminals. That's James Baldwin. And I think Faulkner said that the past is never dead. It's not even the past, right?
Not even past.
Yeah. You have this character in there, Gamble Vance. Well, you know, she's recently divorced, and an art conservator who restores not only portraits, but centuries-old miniature portraits. Mm-hmm. You know, tell us about Gamble and, you know, maybe how much of Gamble is mirrored in you.
Well, if my mom was here, she would say all of Gamble, but that's not necessarily true. So Gamble Vance is this early 30s, recently divorced art historian and art conservator, like you said, and she lives in a kitchen house in Charleston, South Carolina. A kitchen house, for people who don't know, is literally a house built back behind one of the larger houses so that if the kitchen caught on fire, the house would not also burn down. It was a law that was put into place in the 1800s in Charleston after a horrible fire destroyed much of the city. So a lot of houses down there still have these kitchen houses, which are now used for different, like their garages or their apartments or their, you know, Airbnbs, whatever they are. So Gamble lives there with her black lab, and she works at this museum in a job that she absolutely loves. But she is this quirky, really wry, just kind of says what's on her mind. Like, Gamble's the kind of character, the kind of person that what you see is what you get with her. Like, she doesn't have much of a filter. I always say that I kind of have a glass face, you know, and I wish I didn't, you know, like I wish I had a poker face, and I really don't. I mean, everything that I'm thinking and feeling shows, and Gamble is very much that way.
For folks that want to get your book or learn more about your work, how can they go about that?
Oh, thank you for asking. The book's available anywhere books are sold or at the library, or it's in paperback everywhere. And then at Regal House, you can order a hardback copy if you want. So that's a really cool. And they're such a great indie publisher, and they include a sweet note with every book that they mail. So I also love bookshop.org, you know, is a great one because that supports indies.
Bookshop.org.
Bookshop.org. Yeah. And you can either choose your indie on it, or they just, you know, make sure the proceeds get split among indies. I mean, I'm obviously not a business person, but I think that's how it works. But my author website is www.katherinescottcrawford.com, and there's all kinds of stuff there. I have a newsletter, a monthly newsletter, free newsletter that I
send out if you want to subscribe to that. It's called I Take Heart. And it's mostly full of my book recommendations, like the things that I'm reading. And the
Fantastic. No, yeah. that's great. So this is
like TV your website shows is and stuff.
CatherineScottCrawford.com. And that's Catherine with a K.
K. Yes, Catherine, thank you for that.
CatherineScottCrawford.com.
Yeah.
On the website here, I'm looking on my phone. She says, stories are the way I walk through the world. The truth is I'm trying to live as many lives as possible. And I'm much appreciative of your work, particularly of this novel. If not for Catherine Scott Crawford, I would not know what a peplum is. And I know now that it is a short section attached to the waistline of a blouse, jacket, or dress. So if I ever get transported back to that time, I'll know what to bring back for my girlfriend. Again, Catherine, thank you so much, fellow VCFA alum. Thank you for being with us at Listen and Be Heard Radio.
And thank you, Tony Robles.
Listen and be heard to your heart. Once you speak and talk to your heart, enormously beautiful things can come forth. So listen and be heard. You hear yourself. Hear your thoughts. Listen to your thoughts. And perhaps take action.
Once it's heard, it can't be unheard. Once it's published, it's not going to be unpublished. Once you read the poem, you can't unread it. No matter how an individual may try to push it to the side, forget about it, it's still in there. And it's the words, the meaning, the feelings behind it are taking root in their psyche, and they can't get rid of it.
Something that I didn't think of in the same way that I've been thinking about very differently, being a part of the bookstore project, is the idea of archive, especially informal archive. How important that is for people and for culture, for community and for society, to make sure that someone's taking care of your stories and your experiences.
This is the Listen and Be Heard Hour, brought to you by Listen and Be Heard Network.
Omnipotence of time is the rhyme of our reasoning brains. How a beating drum is always now. Each breath, life and death, to us partition thoughts bought at high prices, bound in books, getting looks from strategize. The ages, pages, read in stages of beginnings and endings. But now is always now. How we read between the minds of our generation. The greatest persuasion. Is it pride and prejudicial society, anxiety in our DNA? Another way to say pray to play, because play is all we do on the staged ground, surrounded by sensations of time, being our relatives, walking and watching the signals, electrical, chemical, systemic synthesis of synaptic convocation, a standing ovation for this moment, this time around the world, in day's difference to every reference.
This is the Listen and Be Heard Hour. I'm Martha Senator. And Tony Robles has walked a little further down the garden path to meet up with Malaya Ulan, the youth poet laureate of Philadelphia, who actually moved to Miami for her senior year in high school.
I recently moved to Miami in August, in my senior year.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's a little rough, but I'm pushing through. Yeah. Miami is a very interesting community because I moved into Kendall, which is like South Miami, and it's predominantly Latino school. So like all my classes, it's just like Spanish. At first I was like, well, this is a huge culture shock because I'm like so used to just hearing English. And it was a very cool experience to like learn about other people's cultures. But then it kind of, in my first month, I like drifted into the wrong crowd and realized that they did not believe the same things that I believed in. Right. And they were also Latino, but it was it was very interesting to see, like, this kind of bubble that Miami has formed in the fact that everybody is Latino. So people think that they are part of this we that Trump is, like, going for, and that they are not part of, like, the immigrants that are going to be discriminated against because maybe they're recently naturalized. And I was having this one conversation with a classmate who is actually, he's Puerto Rican and Ecuadorian, right? So U.S. citizen either way, right? But he was like, I would never be racially profiled or ever. And I'm like, I'm looking at him, he's like very brown, right? Speaks Spanish. And he's like, this is not possible. I am American. And then I told him about in Philly, because I don't know how many months ago this was, but there was a restaurant in North Philly, or it's Puerto Rican owned, and they were detained by ICE.
Mm.
And they're U.S. citizens.
Yes, right? Yes.
But it just like goes in and out the ear, because people like don't want to accept that when you leave this like bubble, and the bubble is beautiful. It's a very beautiful bubble. It's amazing to be surrounded by your people. But when you leave the bubble, you're not going to be accepted in the same way that you think you are. Like, there's going to be discrimination. And they're fighting for this thing that they think they won't receive discrimination from, but they definitely will. And I don't know, it's just very sad to see. But there's also definitely students that are, like, not pro-Trump, not pro-ICE. It's interesting to see how people, like, navigating these spaces, because even the teachers are promoting this kind of pro-ICE, pro-Trump narrative, and also doing a lot of censorship in history. So I have like a government teacher, and she's not supposed to be like teaching about slavery. She's supposed to be teaching about like government laws, like this house, that kind of thing.
Kind of like civics,
yeah.
Right? Civics,
yeah. But instead she was like telling the class that basically slavery wasn't so bad, and George Washington wasn't a very bad enslaver, and that his enslaved people liked him, and like just saying like these crazy things that are not based on facts, because he like literally pulled his enslaved people's teeth for dentures. Like, there's no way to justify this, but this is the kind of education that people are being provided with. And it's like very sad to see, because there's a lot of people in my school who are like just immigrated to the United States, and they have no context of the United States history. And this is the first thing that they learn, is like this very censored history.
Thank you to Tony Robles for inviting Malaya Ulan to the Audio Garden. And he actually spoke with Malaya and with Catherine Crawford for almost an hour each. And we have been featuring our full-length author interview video conference videos on our website, as well as on our YouTube channel. So if you want to hear the entire conversation uninterrupted with any of these authors, please visit us at listenandbeheard.net and sign up for our email newsletter. And then you'll get to read the headlines as they come through and find out about all the exciting and beautiful, luscious flowers that are blooming in the Listen and Be Heard Network Audio Garden, and in our visual textual garden as well, which is really exciting. You'll also find our master reading list, which has every book pretty much that we've ever talked about on the Listen and Be Heard Hour, and other shows like Beyond Borders, it's all categorized. You could look for memoirs, novels, children's books, history books, environmentally related books because you know that's one of my pet topics. And it's all there. All the authors Tony's spoken to, and also more recently, Nilsa Rivera, who we'll be hearing from next week. Actually, we're going to hear a little bit of that later in the hour as well. The book written for writers with ADHD. We have a couple weeks left with our high school interns here before they graduate from the Institute of Collaborative Education here in New York City. And we've been honored to partner with the school to do this internship program. And we're actually looking for support for these two young men, Micah and Javier. You can go again to our website at listenandbeheard.net and see under the intern link. If you go there, you'll see all the wonderful work that they've been doing. And you could also contribute by way of Sound System Culture, which sponsors Listen and Be Heard Network, to making it possible for us to give them summer jobs before they take off each for their own college in upstate New York in the fall. So please consider helping them to develop their skills further and helping us to pay them for their efforts, which they richly deserve. Still coming up on our little walk through the audio garden, some really great music from Groove Collective that Hernan is going to tell you all about. And after that, we're going to give you a little bit of that conversation about among writers with ADHD, talking about a book for writers with ADHD. And also a conversation that I was honored to have with Hernan, with a young man named Dylan Williams, who runs his services, Hybrid Indigenous Stewardship. So please, stick around. Listen to the sounds of the audio garden, and I'll meet you on the other side of the bridge in a minute or two.
Control freaky frying pan handstand in the Jim Crow low downy willowy whisper and crisper apple from the trinkle doomsayers, players of the delicious nutrimonious pandemony. What are you walking about? A busyness, dizzy nest of words, wiggles, jiggling, flesh fresh and meshed with life on earth, birth of emotional promo. Shun the ones who speak for weekly waking alarms, charms from the deviled dregs of deprivation, starvation of the condemned, the hemmed intervisionary collision of creationary caution tailspins, tins of tea and tempt me, preempt my programmatory memory, confabulation of consternation of patience with impatigo, had to go there, where you hat so I know where you're at, frat boy without a toy.
I think listening is like a really crucial part of my own practice and being heard. I guess there's a difference between listening and being heard, right? Like I feel like listening is sort of at the core of so much. Like if we listen to each other, you know, I think that we'll hear better and we'll understand better, certainly. And the world's very noisy in so many ways lately. I think it's harder for people to, like, the practice of listening is difficult. Yeah, those are definitely things that I think about in collaboration, interacting with other writers is like a core practice of listening. So with She Who Has No Masters, it's really like a practice of listening. Like we talk about engagement, like a poetics of engagement, but I think it's like at that, you know, the heart of it is like being willing to listen to each other and learn from each other.
What's up? It's Hernan Ramiro Rodriguez Sierra over here, also known as Jay Rodriguez. Man, we have a great show for you as always. Music's always off the kazizzle, baby. Hey, thank you, Martha Senator, Listen and Be Heard Network, for always hosting us. And thank you, Sound System Culture, all of you guys. Listen to this beautiful music. You can only hear it here. You don't hear anywhere. All right. Coming right up is a piece that people have been asking me to play on the show for a while. It's called Jay Wrestles the Barry Constrictor. It's from the We the People album, The Groove Collective, with Richard Worth on flute, Bill Ware on vibraphones, Nappy G, Barney McCall. Everybody's on this thing. Tal Shore, Jonathan Marin, Genji Sarasai, Krista Burge, Nappy G. It's quite the scene. Josh Roseman, Fabio Morgera, Jay Russell's Barry Constrictor features me on baritone saxophone and the Groove Collective. And after that, you're going to hear another piece called Night Waves, as well as Where Are Your White Shoes, a piece that you rarely hear. It's from the Groove Collective record, We the People. All right, now. Check it out. Don't forget to support Sound System Culture and Listen and Be Heard Network. All right. Peace out. Bye.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Woo, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Sound good. Sound good. One more time. You do one more time, and that should be it, right?
This is the Listen and Be Heard Hour, brought to you by Listen and Be Heard Network, a project of Sound System Culture.
Our televised angel prize lies from do-gooders. Woodier woodbins of used clothes for the betrothed at birth. Chained to worth on the dark mark, ketamine, dreamy sickle cell bell jar. Far from the desert sun, beating everyone's drum. Ho hum, for your life, be your own wife. Live with strife and questionable, congestible digestion of indices. Infinities considered from a point of divination, procrastiniquity, liquidity as cash, cold, creepy as a haunted histrionic hag, nagging your unheard subconception of creating with some of you, and one who is you who sees bodies and brains and stains on the Carpathian cacophonic grit greets grown at homegrown with joyful soil based, basically baked with fire, aspiring to be air in the lungs of everyone.
This is the Listen and Be Heard Hour. I'm Martha Senator, your host and producer. I'm also a poet, a writer, a teller of fairy tales, and I have one coming out soon, a book called Mark and the Queen Fish, which I will give to you when it comes out later this year if you decide to become a member of Sound System Culture. Next week in the Audio Garden, Nee Rivera is going to welcome the editors of Chaos, Creativity, and Completion, a book for writers with ADHD. Let's listen to a little bit of that conversation now.
So Nilsa, I really related to what you were saying about getting a late in life ADHD diagnosis and not having any resources about writing an ADHD. And that's basically what brought us to this. I was also diagnosed late in life. I think I was later in life, I should say. I think I was 43 and I posted on social media that I had ADHD, and Chloe and I had been in grad school together 20 years earlier, and Chloe private messaged me and said, I have ADHD too. And somehow that got us talking about proposing a panel at AWP, which is a big writing conference. I think it stands for Associated Writers and Writing Programs.
Sounds right.
Or something
Association
like that.
Of, yeah.
Yes, there you go. So we proposed a panel on writing in ADHD because it was something I was super interested in, but had never read anything about really. And what really surprised us was that when we got there, the room was packed full and there were so many people who were interested in the topic. And I think it's because there weren't any resources out there on writing in ADHD. So do you want to step
in? Yeah. And I would say, I mean, also even just ADHD resources in general, I had been diagnosed a while before that in my late 20s, but also had felt like when I got my diagnosis, I read a couple of the kind of ADHD self-help books that were out there, and they, I don't know, they weren't super helpful. I felt they didn't reflect my experience that much. And I kind of like read them and took it in and then put it away. And there was also no public conversation about it at that time. This was like, it was like 2001 when I got my diagnosis. So I just sort of like kind of filed away that information and didn't really do a whole lot with it or talk a lot about it for a long, long time. And then when Lisa contacted me, which had to have been like 21 or so, maybe, right, basically 20 years later, because Lisa reached out to me and I started having that conversation with her, I began to realize how much my ADHD intersected with all the parts of my life.
That was Nee Rivera in conversation with Chloe Martinez and Lisa Van Orman Hadley, the editors of Chaos, Creativity, Completion, New Approaches to Writing and ADHD. And we'll be welcoming them as our featured guests in the Audio Garden next week. So I hope you will come and join us. The time goes by so quickly here in the Audio Garden. And it's always my pleasure to walk along the pathways with you and point out the wonderful things that are growing all around the garden, the network that's growing. And who is the network? We the people. We are the network. And by reaching out and communicating, listening, and being heard, we are always growing and making new connections that nourish us and the world around us. And Hernan and I met with a really extraordinary young man a few weeks ago who's featured on our sister podcast here on the Listen and Be Heard Network. It's called Beyond Borders. And I want to leave you with a bit of that conversation. His name is Dylan Williams, and also joining us was Anna Farport.
Well, it's important to me and for most tribal people in general that they practice our culture and they live the way, you know, like our ancestors did. It's a beautiful thing. Watching my aunts and, you know, grandmas making baskets is a beautiful thing, with listening to my uncle and then sing our songs and tell our stories. But all those things require our cultural resources, like our willow for basket making, or dog bane, or dog wood, the ferns. There's like so many plants that are we use and still use to make our baskets, to make our designs. And so because I want to support my cultural people, that's why I stew with Doyant, because it makes these things abundant. Right now, they're really hard to get. And they're growing in a way that's not able for them to make the baskets because they grow sick, they grow bent and crooked, and you need really young, fresh, pliable shoots that you can make and bend to make these beautiful baskets. And the only way to do that is by stewarding. And so you could find these things out in the wilderness and in good condition, but a lot of my basket making people are their elders. They can't go off and hike in the woods like they used to. So I'm trying to bring these things closer to them and more abundance, so they can just go outside their backyard and have these things, as opposed to having to trek around in the wilderness and try to find these things.
When people are like looking on your website and you're offering certain services to the general public,
yeah,
right?
Oh, we usually work with agencies. Like I said, it's U.S. Forest Service, resource conservation districts. But there are some landowners who want to restore their land. So we can really do everything from a project, from the implementation, from the design and planning phase, like figure out, like doing a biological survey on your property to see what you have, what you don't have. And then through that, developing a plan on how to restore I always revert to my cultural resources, my cultural objectives, but also what the landowner, what the agency, what their objectives are. And they're usually pretty aligned, or I can usually find a way to interweave my cultural objectives into those regardless. So yeah, we can do really restoration from the, you know, tops of the headwaters and now to the bottom of the ocean. And everywhere in between, whether it's waterways or riparian corridors, grasslands, woodlands, and now, yeah, kelp forests and the and getting rid of the purple sea urchins. Here are some of our indigenous crew members are dive certified. So it's really like the whole thing is, yeah, just anywhere that the land needs to be healed and restored, we'd like to be able to be a part of that in any parts of the process, whether it's, like I said, invasive removal, replanting, increasing the amount of forage and food for the deer, for our quails, for our turkeys, increasing fish habitat, reintroducing beaver back in the ecosystems. I know there's not that's such a scarcity of beaver on the East Coast, but back in California, they're almost extinct. So that's a big thing we're pushing for now is reintroduction of beaver or beaver mimicry so that we can add that component back into the ecosystem because they have they're a keystone species that allows water to reside and stay put, so we don't have such devastating fluctuations of drought in California.
Right. I studied a little bit about what they call analog beaver dams, and I tried to apply some of that when I was living on like 6 acres.
Thanks as always to Davian Dial at WPVM Radio in Asheville, North Carolina, for introducing Listen and Be Heard to the broadcast airwaves. KCEI in Taos, New Mexico. KEPJ in San Antonio, Texas. KHOI in Ames, Iowa. And KFOI in Red Bluff, California. And other stations that are part of the Pacifica Affiliate Network for cultivating the audio garden in your communities, and our own Listen and Be Heard network, host of WLBH.org. Please visit us at listenandbeheard.net and sign up for our email newsletter and at our Listen and Be Heard YouTube channel, where you will find unedited video interviews of our featured guests. My name is Martha Senator, and I want to thank you for listening and giving me the opportunity to be heard.
Living, living, living with you.